This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
How you doing?
Nice, dude. Were you mid-trick?
Yeah, I'm mid-trick killing a fly. You'll pick it up on the mic. You know, it's one of those. Come on, buddy. There it is.
Dude, I have no jokes. If I could start, holy shit, dude, you aren't joking. Yeah. Now, I do feel like I'm walking in on a trick, by the way. You're going to flip that around. And like, you're going to be the fly and your face is going to be on the portfolio.
The joke be like, yeah, that I wish I was that prepared. I wish I was.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like, oh no, this was my college diploma. Why did I use this? How you doing?
Good, man.
Hey, good.
I've spent the, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I'm doing well.
You,
this is a, it feels like I'm in the same room with you. This is nice. We're hanging.
I do like the one of my favorite parts about getting to, you know, do these Zooms is you get your choice of backdrop if you're doing this right. And I mean, dude, this looks like a house I would visit if I just got married, like the open house. What I'm trying to say is you're a very put together.
I have nothing to do with that part. Come on. My wife's an interior designer, so this is her. Yeah.
That's shut up. No wonder it looks so good.
Tapestry work. Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Do interior designers take, are they flattered when someone's like, your place looks like a place I would buy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think, oh, it looks like it's out of a magazine, you know?
Like if someone walked into your house and they saw your meal, they're like, this looks like the plastic food that they sell at like Fisher Price, or it looks like the plastic food they would have set out for an open house. I think right. You probably would take.
Then you might be offended.
Yeah, you might be offended. Like,
this looks like the food and the pictures and the menu.
Yeah,
I guess it depends like on the that. Restaurant. Yeah.
Now, is there an equivalent to magic for that? Where it's like if someone sees a really good trick and they're like, "Oh, you're good."
Yeah. That looks like a trick.
That my buddy does, who's also a magician. And you're like, no, he's not. I haven't heard of him. There's like
six
of us.
My uncle does. When he's wasted, he does the trick. Pulls his ear off.
Please tell me you get like the way comics do. And I'm sure our mutual friend Dan Levy you guys have probably discussed this where, you know, you get friends and family that go, oh, you do this. And something in the arts where it's, I'm sure musicians get it too with pitched song titles or album cover ideas. But the way a comic gets pitched jokes pre and post show or from family through text or whatnot.
Oh,
do
yeah.
You get that? Is that, that seems harder to me.
I will get, it's hard. Well, what's sad is that, you know, I'm sure you have someone after a show, they're like, hey, I got a great joke. And they tell it to you and it doesn't take too long, hopefully.
Yeah, but it's usually, by the often, way, surprisingly yeah. Very racist or anti-Semitic and not something that's going to make its way into the act. But I'm like, I will be telling this story later involving you, sir.
Yes.
I'm a woman. Fair enough. St. Louis is a big, big city, but but it's usually something that is like not even close to what, like, you know, comedically that I would fuck with. But
they're like, and hey, Adam, you can do that one if you want. You're like,
oh,
thanks.
Dude, the you can have it where you're like, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it's literally going to be told to one other person just for the sake of kind of ripping you apart. But what do you get in the magic for?
Well, I will get somebody, hey, can I show you a trick that I do? But it's never like a quick trick. It's never like badow. You know, it's like, okay, so I got a deck of cards. I'm gonna deal out
by the way, badow
piles of seven.
It's like the original ta-da, right?
Badow. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Al could have been a thing, but ta-da, it really stole
it. It stuck, dude, yeah.
But okay, the tricks I get shown involve like piles of cards and counting. All right, I'm going to do 21 piles of 7 cards, okay? And then, cool, and now let's redo it. Now I'm going to do 21 piles of 6 cards. And you just, you forget even what card you picked. And I'm, and you know, a lot of times it's like a kid, so I have to, by the end, just act like they're right, even when I don't remember.
Oh, my God. Because crushing a kid magician's dreams is probably one of the worst things you can do.
Well, because then they're going to become a comic, you know? So you got to be careful.
Nice, dude. Wait,
you got to be careful.
Did you get support from the fam when you've been fucking with magic since what age?
I've been fucking with it since I was 12.
That seems
That's young.
It is young,
that's
right?
Young.
I remember buying like the fake coloring book from a magic store in Seattle where you turn the pages from the middle and it's fully colored in. You pull it from the top and it's black and white outline.
You mean the bottom.
Oh my God, you have it. Oh my God, yes, that exact book.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I just made a magic kit. I made a magic kit to sell online and raise money for COVID relief. That's why I happen to have that. This isn't like from my repertoire. It's not a new bit I'm working on.
It's not from my closet as a kid. What if you also
might be? It's in mint condition. So
that's
Yeah, you were describing it, right? They're all black and white.
Yep.
Color it. You got to kind of rub the color from the cover and badow, and then it's color. But in order to use it again, you got to erase the color. And oops, I erased too much, right? Oh. Am I bringing back nostalgia for you?
Oops, I erased too much, not to be confused, which was the original title for Oops, I Did It Again. But Brittany's like, dude, her people are like, this is not going to be as catchy. Wait a second. When do you pick up that stuff? The in between, like, hey, the trick is done, right? Is that kind of what that is?
Yeah. You know, I've been accused of always looking like I'm about to do a trick. Like, you know, like, I don't know, you know, what I'm doing here, but, you know, like always about to do a trick. And when does that probably came about, like maybe in high school, because in high school, you know, like I was obsessed. So I was, you know, like I would have a deck of cards like under my desk, you know, practicing moves. And it looks like I'm playing with myself, you know, to anybody else, but I'm practicing.
Which is a great decoy, by the way, if you're trying to, let's be honest, you know, magicians that are starting out, masturbation, a great way to kind of take focus off of what's really happening with the card.
Yeah. Is he masturbating? Is he practicing card tricks? Either way, it's creepy. Whatever it is, it's creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, so you would really under the desk in school just kind of,
trying to get the hands. Yeah, you're trying to, you know, like there's little moves with cards that just require repetition. You know, and I'm at my desk, which is why I just have a bunch of shit around here. But like most of these card moves, you know, it's like, okay, I got to kind of do this thing, you know, that kind of whatever. I learned them in high school and I couldn't, like every sleight of hand bit I know is from what I learned in high school. Like I couldn't learn to do that stuff now because I'm too ADD. I don't have like the, you know, when you're young, you're like a sponge, you know, like my biggest regret is I didn't learn to play the guitar when I was a kid. Cause you know, you feel like you just learn it when you're a kid.
I know.
As an adult, I think you just feel like a failure, you know? And
you're like, I missed my chance. Also, there's a lot of other things to fill your time with now versus as a kid. So who got you into it, folks?
Well, let's see. I broke my arms when I was 12 because I was riding my bike with rollerblades on, trying to impress some girls. And I was in cast for 6 months. And this is a true story. I had a doctor who kind of recommended that I learn magic, prescribed me card tricks as physical therapy. That's how I got into it. Parents bought me a bunch of magic kits, you know, this kind of stuff. And then growing up in St. Louis, there's kind of like a full-on magic community, like a subculture where you would have these, you know, every other Wednesday night, you meet in the basement of the Presbyterian Church. It's the Society of American Magicians. And it's like me, maybe one other 14-year-old kid, and then a bunch of 80-year-old dudes. And everyone is kind of connected because of this mutual love of the craft. And you kind of have these mentors and you kind of like, oh, I want to learn card tricks. So I'm going to hang out with this guy for a little while. Oh, coin tricks. That's really cool. Let's start hanging out with this guy. And you really, it's a very sharing kind of kind, loving world, you know? And so I was very lucky. I cause there's no YouTube tutorials when I was starting out. You either read it from a book or you have to learn from somebody. So That was kind of my upbringing. Weird, creepy church basement hangs.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the having someone around you that is experienced in it. I used to hang out with my mom when she worked as the, like, social activities director for, like, a senior citizen home. And there's always this weird guy upstairs who would play pool. He ended up, like, teaching me how to play pool. And, you know, I'm all right. But this guy was, like, kind of my, you know, mentor for that, but it was just this weird guy that hung around the nursing home. I don't even know if he was, like, supposed to be there, but he was always there and had access to the pool hall. And I don't know how I would have learned how to play at all had I not been around that guy.
And you probably gave that guy
Scott Baio. Yeah.
Yes. So, that's where he is now.
He's still there.
But you probably made that guy's day every day. You asked, like, hey, can you show me some tricks? You know, show me some moves. And yeah. It made him so happy. Yeah.
When did you feel like, obviously as a kid, and you start to pick up and get a little bit of, like, trust in yourself and, like, okay, I would venture to assume that once you start getting obsessed with the art form, that you're just like anything, like you said, like as a kid becoming obsessed and practicing. I mean, were you just constantly trying to master a handful of tricks, or were you like, I want to, like, was it overwhelming to where you're like, I just want to learn everything and I'm reading and trying everything? Or were you like, let me get a couple things down and start doing those to friends and family and then kind of move on?
Yeah. You know, I think it was very much like, I want it all now. I want to know everything. I think
Veruca Salt approach.
Exactly. But yeah. The first, I think, task was to have a show. I needed to have an act, you know, because I think to me, at least to my dad, what really made him enthusiastic about supporting it is that, well, it's like an entrepreneurial endeavor. You can do gigs, you can make money, you know? So I was like getting paid $45 to do a kid's birthday party. So I had like an act, you know, I had my 30-minute show. Once I had that down, like, I really wanted to know everything. I'd go to these magic lectures and I want to learn how to do doves, you know? So I then owned 12 doves and I became a dove guy. You know, I want to learn how to, yeah, for real. Yeah. Like Lance Burton, I saw him when I was a kid, Vegas magician.
Oh yeah.
You know, dapper in the tux. Like he was
one of the best, right?
The guy, one of the best. And he would do a dove act in his show. And it was like to classical music. And it was just beautiful. I mean, he's just like folding up handkerchiefs and doves. It's like, there's nothing that makes an audience like just shit themselves with like, how the fuck is this happening? Because there's just doves coming out. And when you see a bad dove act, it's very cringy because you can kind of tell where the doves are coming from. You're like, this guy looks like he's lost 50 pounds from the beginning of the act to the end. I think the doves were in his jacket, you know, but Lance does it so elegantly. So that really inspired me. I started doing a dove act, trying to come, you know, I think pretty early, trying to come up with my own tricks. I learned because I was exposed to these smart magicians that there's the tricks that everybody does, the hacky material. You can do that stuff really well, and that's okay. But it's great when you can do a trick that nobody else does, or do a trick in a way that nobody else does. So that's where my head started going of like, oh, I guess now that I understand the principles of magic, just like you learn the chords on a guitar, you can then kind of write, you learn cover songs before you write your own songs. I think with magic, you kind of learn how it all works and then you can kind of remix it and come up with your own stuff.
The same way like an athlete would, you know, go to a game, probably like seeing Michael Jordan live and get inspired to up your game. Was that similar for you?
100%. Seeing Lance Burton, seeing Penn and Teller, you know, that was big. I remember seeing them as a kid and, you know, like, they were so different than any magic that I'd seen. I don't even know if I would have called them magicians as a kid. You know, they were just like
illusionists or what?
Illusion, just like what would I call them? Like social commentator, comedy magic duo. Like I don't. Yeah. They were just like awesome. You know, they would every time they would like blow your mind with a trick, they would also then like reveal how a different thing worked, and it just was.
And the performer entertaining aspect of it, which you're fucking incredible at. Like not only like seeing you at the Magic Castle up close was such a treat, because now seeing Magic for Humans season 3, so good. I don't know how you top each season, by the way. And it's, I mean, your likability factor on top of your tricks, stunts, illusions, whatever you're calling it, mind fucks. I mean, I don't know if there's one word to really title it all.
Yeah.
But it's like you have your showmanship is like so good and so strong.
Well, thanks, man.
And even at the Magic Castle, man, again, that's what really like blew me away, because in a confined it's almost like, you know, for a comic, which, you know, your comedy chops are, did you do stand up at all ever?
I never did just stand up. No. I mean, I idolized stand ups, and then in college, like I was befriended stand ups, but I never did.
You went to school with Dan and Eliza, yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But I would have been in your group, but I not got waitlisted, by the way. I got into SC. I wanted to go to Emerson, got waitlisted, and then SC was like, we'll take this Jew. And I was like, hell yeah. You maybe could, you know, and they put that in the letter. So I was like, all right,
we'll take this Jew. Wow, short letter, short acceptance.
Yeah.
But you know, Dan was able to like bring me into the fold of the Boston comedy community, and you know, I would go to open mics with him. So I would always be doing magic, but I would do jokes in tricks and between tricks. So it kind of felt like stand up with a crutch. A little bit.
Were you kind of studying, like when you would go to shows with him, or just talk to him about comedy, or just watch?
Well, you know, I'm so lucky that I had him in my life early, because without that, I feel like the whole magic community, you don't have anyone really to help you police yourself, like to learn the difference between a good laugh and a shitty laugh. Like, Justin, you're doing that hacky joke and it kills. For him to then explain to me why I still shouldn't do that joke, but I'd be like, but it kills. It gets a huge laugh. He's like, there's a good laugh and there's not a good laugh.
Oh, you know?
Like, so that was like eye opening and realizing, like, oh yeah, if you do a joke that people feel like they've heard another guy do because they have, like, it, just because it kills doesn't mean it's a good kill.
Yeah, you want to have like some integrity with like the material you're putting out there, right?
Yeah, and I feel like in magic, you know, like the presentation, the jokes, all that part of it, like, so rarely do you have anyone who knows what they're talking about to teach you that, you know, because you're busy focusing on the tricks, not the presentation. And I think if you've been in the Magic Castle enough to see some cringy magic performances where it's kind of like they're not laughing with him, they're kind of like, you know, it's
also it's when somebody, again, to compliment your like personable, likable, the likability factor, and to be someone that's engaging to watch and listen to, that I'm sure like helps when you're trying to sometimes, you know, and again, I can't even begin to try to understand how you do any of your stuff, but if you're obviously trying to distract us at some points, right, from seeing what you're about to do. And I never, because that then adds to the element of surprise and holy shit, how the fuck did he do that? If somebody's boring as hell, you're maybe not paying attention, and then you're like, well, I'm just gonna watch his hands or his, right. I don't know, right? Is that
100%? Like, okay. the gab, the storytelling, the jokes, all that, like,
you smile a lot, like it's direction. You want people to watch you, which I think, you know, feeds into the total package.
Yeah, you know, like Dan, I don't know how young he was when you met him, but like, you know, he started doing
online at like 12, and then
yeah,
we both thought we were like talking to we met in like a support group for kids that got.
Yeah,
we thought we're talking to like McDonald's mascots, and there's like a whole separate chat thing where it's like, oh, I'm Grimace. It turns out to be, you know, Earl from Detroit. But so Dan and I met in that, and then it was like, he loves comedy, I love comedy. Do you still perform on Shabbat? Yeah, I don't give a fuck. I live my life to the fullest. And then, yeah, no, I met him when I think we both just graduated and we're doing comedy. He was doing a lot of college humor shows, and
yes.
And he's actually the first guy that brought me on the road to Kansas City. And then they didn't know that he was bringing me. So they didn't have a place for me to stay. And then they had to like bump the features, a whole thing, and love Dan.
He was so confident at a young age. You know?
I was like, going to say, he seems like he's been Dan Levy his whole life.
Yeah. And I remember like when I saw him do comedy, like as a sophomore, you know, like, cause even in college, like, I don't even know who am I? What do I have to talk about yet? You know,
you
like
some
I can
confidence.
Be funny, but
yeah, for sure.
But when you're talking about your life, and so that, you know, I kind of like just borrowed I got inspired by his just crazy bravado confidence that he would do. And I think it helps with the magic, believing your own bullshit. They believe it too, you know? So.
When did you start kind of busting out tricks at parties or at school, and how is it received? You know what I'm saying? Like, were teachers like, hey man, there's a time and a place. I respect the craft and that you actually look like you're pretty good at it. You definitely fooled me. I canceled the pop quiz because of some of the weird shit you put on the wall and it scared me. And I just wanted to go home and be with my thoughts. Or were there like, people that were like, this is amazing. Like, you should, you know, drop out of school and go pursue this. Like, what kind of a balance did you get from?
I think I just needed to learn the right place and time. Like, there was, I think there was a book. I'd seen a guy lecture, and his little lecture notes were called Magic with Class, you know, and he's on the cover with a magic wand. And I was kind of like secretly reading this book in class, and the teacher grabbed it. They're like, Magic with Class, not in class, Justin, and confiscated my book, and I felt burned. But then, in high school specifically, I was the only magician in my high school. So the teachers, I think sometimes when they've lost control of the class or it gets a little rowdy, it's kind of like, all right, Justin, you got a trick for us, you know? So I would kind of like come in as the ringer sometimes and do a trick. But I didn't have like a click. Like, I wasn't like, I didn't have like my tight group of friends. I was kind of like this drifter. And, you know, with magic, you kind of get to be, you know, accepted for as long as you're doing tricks for. And then it's kind of like, okay, I don't have anything else to talk about, guys. I'm going to back away slowly.
Yeah. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop, and then pick your candles, and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%! Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. and pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better, start looking better, start feeling better, okay? Because everybody farts, and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode.
Cool was important. I mean, if I didn't really have a bullying issue just because I was the only magician. It was kind of like, cool, hey, magic guy. Maybe I wasn't even aware I was being bullied. Looking right back, that could be the case.
Did you use magic to, get girls or get, for me, it was like when I was a fat kid growing up and I would start to become the funny kid, then people that I weren't friends with were like, oh yeah, invite him to this fucking thing because that guy's funny. And they wouldn't see that I was double fisting Pop-Tarts. So like, was there that kind of same thing with you where like it got you attention? Like, because like being the only magician in high school, especially where they like, perform at the assembly, or teachers are like, hey, could you do our break room party that's happening, you know, we get fucked up pre-PTA meeting, like maybe you come perform a little bit. Like, did you get
100%? Like, yeah. I mean, you know, like because by the time high school came around, I've been doing magic for like 5 years, and I'm sure the same case with just, you know, being in high school and being funny. It's like, it's not like did you use comedy to pick up girls? It's like, well, it's not like you ever use comedy or don't use comedy. It's like, right. It's part of my personality, so I'm always going to be funny. So they're like, okay, then, you know, Adam's funny. He's not turning it on or off. He's funny. With me as a magician, magic was a part of my personality, so I kind of like always had a trick on me.
Right.
So, and, you know, when you're being funny, there's a confidence that's exuded that people are drawn to. And I think when you're doing magic, obviously, you're kind of like challenging the laws of the universe. So there's kind of a intrigue that comes out of it. And I also, I mean, I think the reason I became a magician is because I didn't know how to talk to girls, didn't know what to say. So magic kind of became the default personality
icebreaker
trick.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
What was the trick that you would always kind of have on hand if you were like maybe going to a birthday party where you're like, there's gonna be girls here, like Denise is gonna be there, and I know that she loves sleight of hand, she loves like close eye magic, but she also loves like, I mean, she loves the quarter trick. Like, if I fucking just, I gotta bring at least a roll of quarters, maybe like do the trick 7 or 8 times. Maybe she's, you know, surprised every time. She's not the smartest girl. That's not why I'm into her. But it's, you know, she suspends her disbelief. That's why I dig her.
Maybe it's meter parking, and I'm gonna need some quarters too. So I got that covered with my roll of quarters.
Right.
I would never leave the house without my sponge bunnies. Okay.
Now, can you say that in 2020?
Sponge bunnies, baby. They're these little foam rabbits. You've seen the sponge ball trick, you know?
Oh yeah.
So these are like they're made to look like little bunnies, and you know, I would squeeze one, it would jump from my hand to her hand, and then they would have babies at the end, a bunch of little baby bunnies.
Oh, dude.
And so this trick is adorable, but also literally fornication is happening.
I was going to say, dude, you're getting them to start thinking, and you're talking about building a family. You're like, we could be these sponge bunnies. And she's like, oh my God, I didn't think of it like that. Wait, so how would you, that's fucking crazy. Yeah, so you're blowing people's minds at this stage in life. And are you, when do you start thinking career-wise of like, all right, I need to, because dude, you're, you know, it's crazy that I'm sure there are people now discovering you for the first time from Magic for Humans, which by the way, you know,
for
I've
your
known-
your podcast, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, dude, this is going to take you up to, this season 4 is probably going to be sent to you right after this drops.
Nice.
But you know, I've known of you for, I think even back to Cupcake Wars days and before that. I've known of you, I think, since I've known Dan, which is, I think, since 2005 or 6. And just, you know, even with your Comedy Central, was it Sleight of Mouth, right? Was your
Sleight of Mouth, yeah.
Comedy Central special. So just being like, oh, when is, you know, and then getting like really into like David Blaine and knowing all the guys and Burton and Copperfield and stuff. And I'm like, when's this guy going to get his, you know, like, I'm like, I feel like you're on the up and up and on Conan and Ellen and Tonight Show, right? Did you do with Jay or was that with Conan?
Yeah, I did with Jay and with
That's
Jim.
Right.
Yeah.
And so clearly it's like, all right, there's just this, all the chips are getting stacked. Are you during that time just kind of sitting back and being patient and being like, all right, like my time's coming to where something like Netflix, where you're going to get that global introduction. Right. And really, or are you like, you know what? I'm working, I'm hosting shows. I'm on all the, I'm getting as much like FaceTime as you could want. You did fucking magic for the Obama family. Apparently that's bonkers. Please
that was
talk
bonkers,
about
yeah.
that.
That was badonk.
What? Badonk.
What was my magic phrase?
Badow.
Did you? Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well,
and then
so
I'll finish
was,
my question.
Yeah, that was, they were having a Halloween party. And back when I was growing up, I used to do the show every summer at this little community that my family had a summer house in called Chautauqua on the Mississippi River. Nice. Not glamorous. We're talking near Grafton, Illinois. It's like, it's rural. And
it's where the sponge bunnies live.
Sponge bunnies, yeah. And this girl who, when she was like a little girl, would see me do shows every summer. And then she ended up being an intern at the White House and was like, you guys need a magician? I know a guy. So that was like a right place at the right time. That was incredible.
Oh my God. Wait, so did she reach out to you or to the White
House? She reached
out
to me. She reached out to me.
So, hey, a weird call. First of all, how are you? You're good. So it looks like you're, so she'd obviously probably seen you all over the web.
She'd
and
see
TV,
me,
right?
And then I'm sure we were Facebook friends from very young. You know.
So what was? Please tell me your reaction when she's like, kind of weird request.
I was
the
in
White
the middle
House.
Of shooting a season of Cupcake Wars, and then she's like, "Hey, this is a weird request. In 1 week, we're having like, so there's no lead time. The Halloween party. You know, we can't pay you or anything, and we can't fly you out. We can put you up for a night, because you can imagine the flack the Obama administration would get for, they spent thousands of dollars on a magician. I mean, you would never hear. That'd be bad for all of us.
Yeah.
So Cupcake Wars like shifted the shoot schedule around because they were like all hyped about this opportunity and kind of flew out, flew right back. And it was so surreal. It was like a
just still doesn't feel real. He was heckling me, like in a positive way. Like, he's the only guy who could be a heckler who's at, every heckler thinks they're helping.
Yeah.
Obama was helping. Like, it was like good heckling. It's like
egging you on.
How's this guy doing this? Come on. This guy's a wizard. Are you people seeing this? You know, like it was amazing. He was like, you know, it was a good vibe.
But
to answer your question. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, were you more nervous for that than you've been for anything?
Anything.
Okay.
For anything ever since. Yeah.
Because never been to the White House, I'm assuming.
Never been to the White House, never met a president, you know. Everyone was in a costume too, which was kind of made it a little easier, but he was not in a costume. He was dressed as Obama in a fleece. That was his costume.
Oh my God.
So
was walking in immediately just feelings of like, holy shit, like, look what I did.
Immediately you're like, you can't believe the place is so small. Like, cause you're in it's a house. You don't really think about that, you know, like, you're like, wow, it's in a house. And
it's like Toys R Us when you're a kid and then you grow up and you're like, this place is like two aisles. It's all bikes and board games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So he loved it. He loved it though.
He loved it. He loved it. Got a photograph. It all felt like a blur and a dream and went home. And then I'm on the set of Cupcake Wars the next day. You know, way to come crashing back to reality.
From presidents to cupcakes, the name of your memoir.
Exactly.
Welcome to King's Guado Hotel. May I have your last name, please?
Good morning, ma'am. Can I help you?
Oh my, what happened?
Bellmen are clumsy and stupid.
It's not a bellman. You've had this job since high school, right?
Well, actually now, I am the bell captain.
Oh.
All right, kid, you ready for check-ins?
I was born.
I think he was gonna say I was born ready.
Steve's the captain. Captain Steve.
The closest thing we have to a god on Earth, Gunther Gashamone!
It's worse than I thought.
He's a complete slime ball, right?
Oh, yeah, no question.
Do you feel my foot on your foot?
That's not me.
There's something under the table that feels like a foot.
What are you doing right now?
I'm working.
I got a promotion.
I just lied to Kelly.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, man. I just want another shot. Sid Whitman worked his way up the ladder and bought the hotel.
He's the boss.
Do me a favor. Take it easy on the bellman, would you?
I'd rather have Crackguard melt my balls.
Take care, boys.
I mean, it's a huge scam. And those girls were in on it, too.
Don't you want to know what our bodies are capable of?
Girl, yes, definitely. I just work here during the day, but my nights is off.
Let's do this!
Gunther is conning everyone with Spirit Fresh.
You broke into a guest room!
This is unacceptable!
He has been impersonating a manager, and that is a felony.
I don't think that's a felony.
He should be fired!
Get set! Go! Bunch of really real G's burning trees till we low, sitting by 45 like I'm Jordan on the floor. Here we go, guess the brain is what they say my name for.
I mean, I'm not sure he's ready for.
Shut up, bitch.
With our minds, we begin to urinate and then, for real, into our pants. I'm unforgettable.
Okay, so yeah, the question.
But to answer your question, like being in LA, like, okay, you know, waiting for your turn. Like I was kind of always, okay, I've been in LA since 2002. Dan and I moved out here. We lived in the Oakwoods together. So that's what, 18 years. And I think I was always trying to like pitch a thing. Let's come up with a, you know, let's pitch a show. Let's try to get on a magic special or this or that. And it was just kind of rejection after rejection after rejection, like, because they were all looking back like, oh, that's a lame idea, you know, like whatever these weird ideas are. And then I think after several years of rejection, I think I realized, you know what, if it's meant to be, and I do believe it is, just sit back, do your work, and don't get all antsy, because I would be very impatient, you know, very like competitive, very like,
well, also you're in a
riled up.
Yeah, there's not, I mean, you could probably count on your hand the number of like working magicians that have the exposure that you had at this point, right? And been doing, like, so you're just like, well, why aren't they like biting at this? Like, there's only a few guys kind of above me that are really out there doing it. So what
I think a lot of it has to do with that. I was going by a stage name until like 2010. I was Just Incredible.
Yes.
And looking back, I was like, I don't think I would have bought a show from a dude named Justin Credible either. I'd let him do my bar mitzvah, but I don't know if I'd put him on my network.
I don't know if I'd let him eat from the kids' buffet though.
Exactly.
did, why you just felt like you needed a stage name? Yeah.
Well, like my mom gave me that stage name when I was like 13.
That's amazing.
And I was like, oh, I'll use that for a couple of years, you know? But what was ironic is that it became a stage name to do like kids' birthday parties, because it was, you know, right on brand for kids' birthdays. Just incredible. And then I started doing NACA and doing all the colleges.
Crushing.
For some reason, that the pun worked for that too. So it kind of just became like people are calling, you know, hey, Credible, hey, Creddy.
Also, you know what you're getting with that name, right?
Well, do you? What do you think you're getting? I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, I think you think that you're in on the joke that we think this is going to be some real kind of cheesy cheese ball, but he's going to be self-aware and it's tongue in cheek, which is what it was.
Yeah.
So it kind of became, it started out earnest for the kids' birthday parties. It's just incredible. And then it became ironic for the colleges.
Right.
And then it just became sad when I hit 30 years old.
I mean, sad. I don't know, dude. Listen to some of these quotes. LA Times calls him a new breed of comic who's making magic cool again for the grownups. Playboy dubbed you the freshest and funniest magician working today, which is always sweet to get a Playboy quote.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, you know, the quotes were like, these tits will make you think tits aren't real. Time Out says his live show has to be seen to be disbelieved. I mean, those are all sweet
quotes about Justin Willman. You know, they weren't saying that about Credible.
Okay.
But those are very kind. Yeah. I think once I finally ditched the stage name and I was like, kind of wanted to be taken seriously in the comedy world as well, is when things started to fall into place.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you just started getting more people.
Well, I started doing like getting in with like the Meltdown scene, you know. Yep. Jonah and Kumail had never had any magic on. So we kind of, they started having me on every few months. And then Chris Hardwick and I have the same manager. So I kind of, he had a YouTube series, the YouTube channel that kind of came out when YouTube did that big launch and gave me a shot there. So it was just, it was kind of when I was just getting my footing in the comedy world. So that was great. And I was like very nervous that comedians are going to give me shit because I'm a magician and, you know, the prop guy.
Oh, yeah.
And people give Carrot Top a hard time, but it was so much love. Like, it was really
you're
very
finding
welcoming.
More comics that were just like envious and interested, right?
I think because they, you know, I think they could see like, okay, he's not just hacky and cheesy.
Yeah.
He's a magician.
And funny. If you're funny, trumps everything, man.
Yeah, people like him. It doesn't kill the mood in a show. You know, maybe you don't want to follow me because, you know, people's brains are on the floor, hopefully.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I get that. But so I end up having to, you know, close a lot of those random shows, which no one wants to. It's like a 3-hour show. No one wants to be there at 11 p.m. when the show ends. But it was good.
What were some of these your YouTube videos? Over like 100 million views. What were you doing?
Well, the Hardwick show was a magic meltdown. Those didn't go crazy viral. Oh, my wife and I did a wedding magic bit in our first dance for our wedding that kind of went crazy, where she levitated me.
Holy shit.
That was fun. But season one of Magic for Humans, we convinced a dude he was invisible. So that was like the biggest magic thing I had online. He's here with us right now. Yeah, he's here with us.
Derek?
Yeah, the invisible guy.
Where do you come up with, I mean, any of your bits? Like, are you similar the way a comic will write? Are you just kind of, you know, you'll get an idea, put down a little note in your phone, write down in the notepad, then kind of go back and flesh it out later? Or do these bits just come to you in the full, like, or is it like, all right, this season, obviously, we kind of focused more on this, so let's try to shift gears to this. I'm always curious, like, because, you know, in comedy, which, you know, what you do, you know, embodies a lot of that, there's always, like, that peeling back and asking more questions, like, if that's true, then what else? Just to kind of, like, squeeze as much as you can out of a joke or a moment. So, you know, is there a similar line of thinking for what you do?
Yeah, like when I'm writing new stuff for my live show, you know, the note section will be full of just random ideas. It'll either come from like, I want to do a bit about XYZ, like I want to do a bit about Parenthood. What's because I got a funny idea of what's a trick that exists or that doesn't exist that would help serve that purpose. Or it's like, man, I love this trick. No one's done this trick for 50 years. This would be so badass. what's a funny reason to do this trick? You know, so I approach it those two ways. But when we're writing the show, we will typically come up with the themes of the episode. You can hear my son crying in the background. He's good now.
Go to your bed.
Go to your bed. That's grandma in there.
Oh man.
She's talking to the dog.
Yeah.
To the dog. Go to your bed.
Can't do whatever you want.
Yeah. We'll come up with the themes that we want to explore. So like for this new season, it's like, okay, we want to talk about the idea of like power, self-care, tradition, vices. And then from that theme, we'll like come up with a bunch of random, vices. Okay. Gambling. Let's do something about gambling. Let's do something about rage. Let's do something about weed, you know? And then from there, like giving parameters, like, you know, giving lines to draw within makes it really much easier, I think, than a blank page to come up with fun tricks and things to explore.
The selfie influencer one was really brilliant and fucking crazy. And to see these influencers be so taken aback, also to be, you know, you could feel a healthy amount of just like, we're pretty fucking cool. I don't know if you know this, but we post pictures, we get paid to post pictures, and you kind of pulled the rug out from under them and held a light up. It was cool to see them kind of get brought down to a normal human level. You know what I'm saying? And really have their minds blown. Where that one, obviously in season 3, which people can go watch now on Netflix, where did that all come from and get inspired by?
Yeah, you know, I think, because sometimes in the show, obviously we don't want to like do a hard takedown on any community or
no,
whatever,
no.
But
and
like,
it was,
everyone,
I mean,
it's yeah. kind of, but it is kind of a bit of a takedown. I mean, like, not that I have anything against influencers. I mean, I think influencers are famous because of us people, you know,
totally.
Their fault. They're like yes. opportunity grabbers, but also, you know, they, you know, it's plenty to make fun of, plenty to yes. lampoon there. Yes. So I wanted to, you know, kind of inspired by just some great mentalism bits, you know, like Darren Brown is an amazing British mentalist who's, you know, a big influence on me and who's so awesome and supportive, kind of has these bits where you kind of use a psychological approach that you let the viewers know kind of what it is you're doing and still get away with it. I thought it would be fun. You know, the minutia of the bit didn't come till like a week before we did it, but we knew we wanted to do a thing where we influence the influencers, you know, like pull the rug out from the people who
yeah.
kind of, you know, hypnotize us. And I think the idea came from just how you'll have a conversation with somebody about a razor, and then the next day a razor's on your Instagram. You know, not that that's influencer related, but something just about how easily like commerce ties into our just we're just brainwashed. You know.
Yeah.
So we wanted to. The hard part was finding influencers who you kind of want to see me punk them, but you also kind of like them. Like the three that we got, I think were really sweet in that they,
oh yeah,
they weren't like butthurt about it. I think they
totally
were kind of,
they were amazed and like understanding of how like, wow, like we, you know, the things everyone kind of is swayed to do a certain thing by something that you're just completely unaware of. And to see it happen that quickly was pretty astonishing, like the kind of the layers and the things that added up for them to, you know, do what they did.
I'm just kidding, there's nobody there. Hey guys, comedian Adam Ray here. Hope you're enjoying this episode of the About Last Night podcast. Boy, I gotta tell you, I've been feeling good lately, and the reason why, Koi CBD. That's right, back in the game, feeling like my best self. Look, Koi CBD is the best CBD company in the business. I don't care what you hear from other people, other comics, Koi CBD. See, I got so much BBD, CBD inside me, I ain't even fucking talking right. You know why? Because I slept well on the Koi CBD gummies. That's right, they've got everything from tinctures to bath bombs to gummies. They got a skincare line coming soon. They got hand sanitizer during these times. It's very important. So what you want to do, if you want to start feeling like your best self, you want to take some Koi CBD bombs, put them in the bath, okay? What? Yeah, come on in. Jackson, I'm doing an ad for my podcast. Can you say hi?
Hello.
Say, I use CBD gummies.
I use CBD gummies.
From Koi.
From Koi.
Koi's the best.
Koi's the best.
It makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good.
I feel like my best self.
I feel my best self.
Look at these muscles.
Look at these muscles.
Kiss them. If you get Koi CBD right now, you go to koicbd.com, promo code about last night, and you get 20% off your first order. That's incredible. Bath bombs, tinctures, skincare, hand sanitizer, gummies. They've got everything. They're my favorite. It's who I use. So start using it for you too. I can't recommend these guys enough. They're homies and all this shit works. Jackson, say 20% off.
20% off.
If you use the promo code about last night.
If you use the promo code after night.
About last night.
About last night.
Show them those guns again. Kiss them. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Like in season two, we did a bit where I kind of asked someone to think of a celebrity and predicted that they would say Tom Hanks. And I kind of subliminally dropped all these Tom Hanks references in the conversation. Whoa. When you play it back. And I think people love when there's like a blurring of magic and real psychology. You know? Like I think people don't like to be in the dark completely. I think it's okay to let them in a little behind the scenes, show them a little bit of how the sausage is made. They don't want to know everything, you know, but they kind of like, I think they respect it more when they know all the diabolical thought that goes into it. So I want to do something a little more complex, like the influencer.
What do you get more joy from, surprising someone that's coming in a little skeptical, or seeing someone that's like somebody that's kind of like, I don't like the bullshit. I know how you did that, do this. And then you blow their mind with something else right after that, that makes them go like, I don't even know what's real anymore, man. Or the person that's kind of like real quiet and timid and like kind of watching in the background and then is the most kind of vocal and animated with their response.
You know, like when you're doing a show, we focus on the person who's not laughing, you know, like that cross arm guy in the cool. front row,
yep.
The whole show becomes for them to break them, you know? So
the audience likes that too, right? The rest of the audience are like, fuck that guy.
Oh, they love that. Fuck that guy. Well, you know, like when you make it known that it's about that guy, then it feels a little less of a win. But yes. Man, like when you can then break that person, or you could tell that they're not sold on you. You know, their girlfriend brought them. She loves you. He's jealous. He just wants to take her home at the end of the night. When you can win that person over, that's the best. So I think with magic, my favorite compliment is like, dude, I hate magicians, but I love that show. You know,
you tour quite a bit, yeah.
I did, man. Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Remember, a couple months ago.
Remember touring?
Touring. I did clubs for years. I love it. Yeah, doing the theaters. Yeah. We'll get back to it.
Wow, theaters.
I don't miss it tons, like because the travel is so grueling and being away from my wife and my son really kind of sucks after a while. But I do miss. I miss the shows. You know, that time on stage when just stuff happens that has never happened. You know, like. The crowd work you feel alive, you know?
Well, do you miss, how do you prep for a big show in a tour versus like a Tonight Show or an Ellen appearance?
Lately, like when I'm doing Tonight Show or Ellen, like typically I'm like sweating balls because I'm doing something I've never done on TV before. You know, when they book you, they don't want you to do something that you did on some other show. You're doing that new chunk. So I'm, like for Ellen or the Tonight Show, I'm kind of like running that bit around town, you know, every night of the week, trying to just get it good, you know, hone it. And then once I've shot it, it's the greatest relief ever. Once, okay, good, we're done. Because it's not old hat. With the tour, like it's a little mix of like stuff I've been doing for a while. There's always a couple new things that I put in there. I take my buddy with me on tour. He's kind of like my stage manager. Right-hand man. And it's a blast. I love getting to a theater 3 hours before the show. I don't have the luxury that you have. I'm sure just, you know, they can sound check for me, just rolling in there as a comic.
No.
You don't have to set anything up.
No, you got to prep everything.
I love getting there early and just kind of just getting the lay of the land, getting everything laid out. I know I'm set. I know it's going to be great. Nothing I hate more than rushing before a show. You know, the flop sweat you get. Oh, shit. The crowds, the doors are open. Stuff's not ready. You know, that's nightmare scenario.
Is there the same way people will ask in the comics, is there a favorite city you like? Is there a, I mean, I feel like the same way I'm like, people want to laugh everywhere. People are into magic everywhere. So, but is there a certain venue or city that you're like, man, I can't wait to go back there? Because there is a little extra juice in the people.
Something about, I mean, I'm sure you relate, like Acme in Minneapolis, that club.
Man,
every time it's like every show is better than the last, and every show I'm like, well, that was the best show I've ever done. And then it happens again. Comedy Works in Denver, the same thing. When you kind of get into a groove, it's just like the crowds are so good and the setup is so perfect. Everybody can see what I'm doing. You know, that's often a problem at some clubs like Caroline's in New York. The crowds are amazing, but the place is so wide, you know? So you got people over here who kind of are just looking at the left side of me. So it's bad for magic. And the stage is kind of like, I have to like wiggle through the audience to get on stage. So that's, you know, the shows go well, but I never like feel good after those.
Right.
Neptune in Seattle's.
Yeah.
Also.
Killer, right?
Oh, that was the best show. Yeah. Yeah.
That used to be a movie theater. I saw in 2001, I saw Blair Witch Project there.
Oh, really?
Creepy
there.
And but it's got like an intimate vibe, spots like that, that you still feel are big enough to house like what you're doing. Do you sometimes feel like, are you looking with a theater gig to like make, like outdo certain bits and tricks to like go, I want to get something to really fill this room that somebody in the very back can see? How many of those versus, you know, something that's maybe just for the people up front?
Well, lately what I've been doing is bringing an extra dude with a camera, and we project the whole show like on a big screen.
Awesome. Just,
and not because like I don't do any big box tricks. I don't check any bags, you know? So like, it's not like any of the magic I do is like big stuff.
Right.
But I found, so I didn't need the camera, but once I brought the camera, I found that just by everybody watching kind of in this framing, when I bring somebody up on stage, or I've got a kid or some dude, so many extra laughs just from like facial expressions that this guy will make, you know, that nobody past the third row would ever see,
right?
That everybody sees. So that's like a big revelation that I kind of added in. So, and because of that, it kind of made me feel confident that I don't really need to do any illusions,
right?
You know,
is there a magician chat like group text, like you, Penn, Neil Patrick Harris, like? Does everybody know each other?
Everybody knows each other.
Really? And do you get messages from these guys? Like when season 3 dropped, do these guys hit you up and go, fucking this trick, or congrats, or is it like?
Yeah, you know, like Blaine, I've kind of been friends with.
No way.
For 10, for like 10 years. And when I say friends, it's kind of like we have each other's number. Like sometimes he will text me back, sometimes he won't. But you know, he's kind of hard to believe. He's a strange bird. He's an interesting man.
Oh yeah.
But I remember like hitting him up before Sleight of Mouth, the Comedy Central special was going to air, just to see if he wanted to, if he wouldn't mind posting about it. You know, a little magicians helping magicians. Yeah. And then he didn't post before, but then like 3 days afterwards, he goes, "Dude, I just watched it. You should have told me it was good. I'm going to post about it." You know, he was like really, really sweet and supportive. He's like, "I just needed to see it first. I can't post about something I hadn't seen." Copperfield, you know, is a really sweet, nice, supportive guy. I don't really know Penn and Teller too well.
Right.
I think we know who each other are, but I've never like gotten tight with them. But Chris Angel, I had a wild night in Vegas once with Chris Angel.
Whoa. Go on.
Sweetest guy.
He owns that city, doesn't he?
He owns that city. Fuck. He's a sweet man.
Every Denny's and strip club you wanted to go into. What is a guy like that?
We didn't make it to Denny's.
Yeah.
We had a good time.
Well, the buffet is better at the strip club. What do these guys say to you that have, you know, just years on you doing it? That I almost feel like too, it's, you see it in every profession where like an older statesman kind of, once they become friends with someone who's on the up and up, they kind of want to be like, you know, like, here's what happened to me, like, look out for this, or this is coming.
Here's how we do it. Here's how we do it. Here, you know, I feel like what's different is that I feel like there's a little bit of kind of less like, all right, let's sniff this guy out. You know, like, because in magic, unlike comedy, you know, in comedy, you can have so much, you know, a whole slew of greats, you know, household name comedians, you know. So there's a little less, I imagine, competitiveness at the top, you know, like,
right.
I don't think Seinfeld and Gaffigan are like fist fighting, you know, button heads. But in magic, you know, like there's only like a couple guys, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's because of the audience or just because of the magician, but like there's only room for a certain handful of like known household name guys at the top. And, you know, and they're all taken. You know, so I feel like there's a little bit of, you know, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. Not that I think any of those guys think of me as a enemy, but I feel like it's just kind of like, let's keep an eye on this guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make sure it doesn't steal our shit.
Yeah. How, for Magic for Humans, how much do you guys prep with trying to find, like the one at the car wash where you started to elevate with the sprayer, that guy's reactions were fucking priceless. And, you know, it's, you're clearly finding a lot of very real people that their reactions are kind of ideal. So how many times, I mean, but there could be times, obviously, like it's a crapshoot. Like, I'm assuming you're not just like, we're going to do this once and hope that this guy gives us like a great moment for TV. Cause what if it was just like, third guy I've seen, Elevate today, man, fucking not really impressive. You know, like, have you had those moments? You're like, all right, well, we got to do it again and find somebody else.
100%. It's like, it's going fishing. Like, you need like this perfect storm of the trick has to like look amazing on camera, and you have, you know, it just has to look great. But also in that same take performance, the person needs to like react in a way that equals what. So at the viewers, they see a dude levitate off the ground, and if the guy, and it looks amazing, but the guy there is kind of like, huh, well, cool. You as the viewer kind of like get blue balls. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't add up. Like, you want to see an amazing trick, and then you want the person there who's the avatar of you, the viewer, to react like you would react, you know? Yeah. And then you feel like it's so satisfying when that person is amazed, as amazed as you would be if you were there. So it's kind of like going fishing. That the dude who I think he was like the third person we did it for, because we kind of like rented out this car wash, so it was closed. But we had like a PA there. Whenever somebody would roll up, they were like, hey, can I wash my car? You know, we kind of like vetted if they seemed like a good expressive person. Yeah. Go for it. Go over there.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
You know, I was kind of all set up, and we would ambush them with the thing. They didn't know that I was a magician or that they were on a magic show.
Cool.
Sometimes it's good to let them know, hey, this guy, Justin, he's a magician. You want to see, he's going to do some magic for you. Then they're kind of hyped in the mood for it. Sometimes we don't want to tell them that because, you know, you just kind of want to make them think that they're seeing shit. Like, questioning their, like, they're tripping, you know?
Yeah, which he was. Yeah. That guy was perfect. Yeah. Did you have jobs, like day jobs, by the way? Like, before?
I was a waiter at an El Torito Grill for a summer.
Nice.
But I just did magic for my tables. Like, I was an okay waiter, but I kind of was, it was, I saw it as an opportunity to work on my close-up magic, you know?
Right.
It was great because it really increased the tips, but then other waiters' tables would ask, hey, can you have the magic waiter come over to us too? And then they would, their tables would tip me. So it was a little bit of friction with the other wait staff. But
what a brilliant way to use that though for practice.
Well, you know, it's like the stage time, you know, like you just need, you need humans to do it for. And I think in comedy, it's tougher because you kind of need a crowd. You don't want to
totally.
End up for three people eating dinner.
Dude, my first job was tour guide at Universal Studios on the Backlot Tour on the tram.
Oh,
so
dude.
400 people, five times a day. And I mean, my bosses would start to come down on me being like, hey, man, no one really cares that you got high and tried to buy an airplane ticket and bought a ticket from LAX to Burbank when we're trying to tell them about where Escape from LA was filmed. And I was like, I get it. And maybe a little bit of both. Like, hey, maybe we fire you. I was like, message received, you know? So a little less, but it was.
Did you love that job, dude? When I came out with my family, I think when I was 15 and we took that tour, and I was like, I want to be that guy. That's
you would
the
have
best
crushed
job.
It, dude. And also when they put in the TV monitors for you to play clips.
Oh, they're looking at your face.
Yeah. So it was, the TVs were in every car and I would play clips, but then again, I started to use it for an opportunity to not just work out bits, but just perform, just, you know, try to make people laugh, and you could hear it throughout, especially in that first car. And they were like,
are you driving as well?
No, you got a driver. So you just,
that's great.
Shotgun seat. So, I mean, dude, you could have done so much shit with that little camera and in all the cars, but I think you have to have, I mean, look, this is probably another thing that separates you, right? When you're thinking of, like, you get conditioned after a while, and I can speak for comedically, to see things in a certain way to where you're like, all right, there's, if something bad happens, how to pull the funny from it eventually, or you just start to see the world in a different way. I'm sure that happens magically, right? Where you're, or is it magistically? What's the word I would put in this?
Magically. Magically,
the way you're
right.
Yeah, okay.
But it does sound like you're talking about
unicorns. Yeah. But like seeing, you know, being in certain environments or world or situations, whether it's like a dinner with family members or when you were at waiting at the tables, like I'm sure things would happen where you go, oh shit, like doing this trick, I saw somebody look at me a certain way, or you get inspired by being out and doing those things. So you saw that as an opportunity to put yourself in a position to not only flex the muscle and work it out, but living, you know, live a life to have worth writing about. I'm sure that applies for magic too. Yeah.
100%. I love the putting myself in like gig situations where it looks like it's going to be a nightmare. Like right. I love doing nooners. When I was doing colleges, I loved doing nooners. I'm sure for comedy, like it's much rougher, you know,
nightmare. Really, yeah.
You know, you need a crowd and you've got like eight people who are eating lunch and who didn't even know there was a show. Right. I love that because I love when there's like low stakes or everyone thinks this is not going to go well, because I feel like it drives me into this, I mean, part ego and competitiveness where it's like, no, I'm going to make this great. You know, I'm going to show them that this was worth coming to, like a, and when my back is against the wall, I feel like is when the best stuff happens, you know, comedically and I think magically, you know, and that's when those little gems, when you're thrown off balance, how you recover ends up being the best part of the thing. And then you're like, well, how do I got to make that happen every time, you know?
Yeah.
Like when mistakes, like I love when, you know, part of my formula in my live show that I somehow get away with, you know, 10 times in my show is where a trick looks like it kind of went wrong, or it looks like you're figuring out how I'm doing it, and then it turns out you're wrong. You know, like we kind of using your expectations and creating this little roller coaster. Like that's my favorite. You know, trying to craft those moments where everyone feels like this has never happened before every time.
Do your does your son and wife, are they? I mean, your wife has to be a fan of what you do to have gotten on board with your life and you, right? How much though, like? Is it to a point to where she's like, if you guys are out, she's like, hey, fucking dude, like these guys, like it'd be really cool if you did. Or is it you bust one out? She looks over and she's like, can we just have one night where you're not doing magic? You know what I'm saying?
It's like the perfect combination of both of those things.
Awesome.
Like,
which is good,
which
right?
Which is great. In that, like, when it's time for Justin to be, you know, doing things or in the spotlight, or honey, okay, you have something really cool new you want to show me. All right, I'll give you my full attention.
Cause you'll work it out on her, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. But if it's like, honey, like we're watching, you know, we're binging a show, or babe, we're at dinner, or, you know, can you please, cause you know, our jobs, we don't have hours, you know, so we're always working. You're always thinking of, oh, this is a bit.
It's 24/7, man, which, you know, takes a
minute. So it's hard to balance. It's hard to turn it off sometimes. So I've always had to, and I'm glad that she's not just like some 24/7 magic fangirl, you know, like she loves magic. We'll go to the, she'll go to the magic castle. She enjoys the magic world, but also it's like, okay, we're done with magic. How about for the rest of the day, no more tricks, you know?
Whoa.
And that's nice. That's nice.
That is nice versus balance. Like you waking up in the middle of the night and she's just like, show me a trick.
Hey, while you were sleeping, it looked like you were about to cut me in half or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's,
so well, they're probably all weird, you know, the way that there's fetishes and freaks for everything. I just got privy to the world of the girls are selling pictures of feet. I had always heard rumblings of it. Didn't know how true of a business that was. So there's got to be magic freak fans out there that are like, you know, I'm sure.
And how'd you discover this? By Googling, hey, where can I buy some feet pics? And you're like, oh, wow, everywhere.
Look, when you're bored in Sacramento and you're in between shows and your Sunday night show, look, you only got one show. So you're like, wow, I'm done by 8:30.
Uh-huh.
So maybe time to go back to the La Quinta. The Wi-Fi is a little extra powerful today. So
I paid for that 5 Gbps, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's
I have a friend who sells her used shoes to.
What the fuck, dude? By the way, no judgment. Like, hey, man, however you can make your money. And the fact that there are people willing to pay what they'll pay for some of these picks. Uh-huh. Oh man, just makes me wish I had cooler feet, you know?
Oh man, I have bad feet. Shit. Bad feet.
Yeah, but there's gotta be
not photogenic.
Some fans out there that would like get some they'd be like, just can Justin Credible just send me, can you just Can I talk to him for a second, James Lipton style?
Can right? I get his used wands? Does he have any used wands? Oh, like gently God. Used.
Or girls yeah. that like want to be cut in half, right? Have you gotten messages from fans that have made you a weep, or from aspiring kid magicians? I know you don't you haven't you was the stuff, by the way, you did with the kids was like unbelievable. And them, I can't remember. Was this season two where about you got them a present that they'd wanted and then they could give it to their folks?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that was
the Christmas episode. That
oh,
was, that
yeah.
Was, that was sweet.
A heart tugging at the heartstrings, man.
I love doing, you know, bits with kids, because I feel like as the viewer, you know, like kids, they don't censor themselves. They an adult, you know, you're filming with them. They never forget that there's a camera on them. You know right. what I mean? So they're always a little bit dulled in their reaction. But kids forget there's a camera instantly and will do and say and react like real and raw. And I feel like when you watch that, you remember that we all were like that when we were kids, because we, you know, we kind of forget that. So it makes you feel good. I love getting, I get emails from young kid magicians a lot asking for advice, you know, and I always love that, because I remember when I was a kid, I would, you know, handwrite and snail mail asking for headshots from my favorite magician. So I know, like, I remember the balls it takes to craft that thing to your, you know, your favorite magician.
Yep.
I get, you know, when, because Netflix kind of is like in everyone's home, and you never know like what people are going through when they find your show. Like, I love when people tell me like, hey, I was going through a really hard time, man. Your show just made me forget about this, or I got through that breakup or whatever. I did a segment with my mom about Alzheimer's in season two, and so many people reached out just who also went through that with their parents, and you know, it makes you feel less alone, which is really nice. But then I get some weird, you know, some weird emails too. Like, I got a dude the other day who, he's like, hey, I know we've met before. Were you ever in a mental institution in Cleveland, Ohio between this year and this year? I was recovering from some, you know, psychedelic addiction or whatever. And he's like, I know we've met, like, some weird people, and also people who like think that I've sold my soul to the devil, which I take as a high compliment. You know,
of course, dude. Yeah,
I would love to get picketed by the Catholic Church. It would be incredible.
yeah.
It's interesting.
I was really sorry to hear about your mom passing.
Oh yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. And I think you lost your mother-in-law, right?
Yeah, stepmom. Yeah.
Stepmom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rough. Never really can prepare for that kind of thing. You know,
she obviously sounds like she was a huge supporter and lover of what you were doing. The stage name.
Gave me the stage name, would book my gigs, or, you know, she was an amazing interior designer, but somehow would always find time to, like, you know, help me finagle cool gigs, was kind of like my mom agent for a while. Wow. Would like paint my magic table, my Just Incredible table, like, so it looked all just like awesome, like all those cool things. And yeah, she was battling Alzheimer's for 10 years. So that's kind of like the real silver lining is just knowing that she doesn't have to suffer from that anymore. Because it really takes this, you know, over the course of 10 years, my sister and I were talking about this, how we feel like we've grieved the loss of her 1,000 times, you know, because you kind of feel like you lose, this little spark is gone. And then, oh man, she doesn't remember that kind of thing. And oh man, she can't remember my friend's names, like all these little things that disappear. And then you're kind of holding on to this, you know, 5-10% of your mom, but it looks like her and it feels like she's still here. So it's just like a farewell to the physical manifestation of her. That's the only, I mean, that makes it a little easier. It's just knowing that she doesn't have to be confused. And
yeah, you have to find those things to, you know, try to meet your own grieving halfway so that you're not just consumed with sadness, right?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. It's
Did she have a favorite trick?
Man, she,
I mean, she, how much,
I mean,
how
when
much
I was doing the Doves, she loved the Doves. I mean, in recent, you know, like in adult life, like she, whenever she was in the audience, just cackle and love it. My dad also like loves, he's like a Marine and a airline pilot, like very kind of, you know, kind of like a drill sergeant vibe, but he would be taken down by magic. Like that's it would make him just like a puppy, like mind blown, like his whole universe shattered by a good trick.
That's didn't really cool. Work.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were, I was very lucky that they were very supportive of it.
So they, your mom has got to see, I mean, so much of your Gloria did, I mean, and shows and appearances. Freaked out, probably. Was she in a place to see you on Ellen and soak that up?
She did. She, you know, she saw me on Ellen, loved it. I was doing like stuff on the Rachel Ray show for years.
Oh,
in the Cupcake Wars. So she saw like, she saw me get what I was working for, you know, all those years very much. You know, like in recent years, I mean, she would watch the Netflix show, but you can kind of tell when, you know, people with Alzheimer's, it's so hard because they just desperately don't want to be an imposition, you know? So they kind of pretend to remember, pretend to laugh when everyone else's laughs, even if they kind of don't get the joke. And you kind of catch on to that. It just kind of makes you sad because she was so funny, you know? So, yeah, recent years were really tough on all of us, but my dad really stepped up on taking care of her. So
that's awesome.
Nice to know. Yeah.
Well, you're incredible. I'm so glad I've gotten to see you live and see, you know, it's really like my girlfriend, which was with me. That was one of our pretty early on in us dating when we went and still together. And when we've
you're
seen
welcome.
Thank you. Oh, hey, by the way, truly, like Magic Castle rules. But again, like you said, it's like going to a comedy show, man. Like everything's subjective. You can see good, you can see great, you can see fucking. And you were the last thing we saw. And you know, let's just say I didn't have to pretend to shuffle under the cards under my desk that night.
There you go. That was in the small room there. That was the 1 week I did that small room where it's like 18
Oh,
people.
For real?
Was the best. Yeah. Normally I do, I've done like this. That was the stage and the parlor, but that was the one room I hadn't done. So that was a fun week. I'm glad you saw that.
Oh, that was special, man. Is, or before we wrap up, I would love to, you know, obviously see if you could recite some dialogue as Armando from The Suite Life.
Oh boy.
But maybe that's a part two, move. And
that could be part two.
Is there anything you could, throw my audience right now that's fun and light? I know, and this was, by the way, I know you get asked this all the time, so if you're like, dude, fuck off, I thought we could just have a fun Dan Levy catch up and you and I get to know each other. But if you're as compelled to do something over Zoom, if not, we could.
Oh, a little magic.
Yeah.
Fun. I mean, I do have a bunch of shit here. Let's see.
You did do the coloring book, but that was kind of my trick.
That doesn't count.
From the early 90s, so.
You know, I was messing around with a deck earlier, and my son, he kind of goes through them so and just shoves them back in the box, so they kind of all go the wrong way here.
Right, right.
I mean, you'll learn. You don't have a baby, correct? So you guys, one day this will happen to all your decks of cards.
Right.
But Adam, 52 cards in a deck. It's all a mess. I'm going to put them into the box here, okay? Think of any card in the deck, Adam. I can't have you pick a card, but you can think of any one of the 52. Make it a random one.
Okay.
What card?
Four clubs.
Four clubs.
Yeah.
What was our magic word earlier? Badao?
Yeah.
Badao. Say badao.
Badao.
Look at this. What happens is every card in the deck, except for one, every card in the deck is facing the right direction now.
Okay.
Every single card, except for one, which is the four
no,
clubs.
Oh, no.
Badow.
What the fuck, man? What the fuck? How? Why? What is happening? I'm
Fun.
Dead.
Fun.
Dude, what? That was like nothing for you. That was like a throwaway line in like the end of a big club. I mean, that's incredible. You're unbelievable, dude.
Oh, thanks, dude.
I can't wait to see what you continue to come up with and create, but you're, man, I cannot recommend Magic for Humans all three seasons enough. You're brilliant. You're likable. You're funny, you know, and watching as a comic, man, it's like weird to see like my comic part of me, like critiquing the funny. And I'm like, it's all there, man. He's bringing it. Like
that's
your
great.
Jokes, little puns, little things like little winks and sound effects. Like it's really fun, dude. My nieces are twin 10-year-old girls. and they've seen the first two seasons because I got them hooked on it, and I know they're getting ready to jump into season three. So thanks for providing them with some entertainment and giving
my
them a
pleasure.
Break from fucking The Sims and Fortnite, because you know, if you're gonna consume yourself with stuff, have it be stuff that's like, you know, inspiring. Like Fortnite is only, you know, it's kind of
it's dancing, or I don't know Fortnite. I'm old, I guess, but yeah,
it's a first
inspiring story. Challenge though, and hopefully accidentally educational. 1,000%. You learn a little something.
Yeah, you're checking all the boxes, dude. Well, thanks for making time, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
I can't
this
wait
awesome.
To see you live in person again, man.
One day.
Okay.
One day we'll be in person.
Yeah. I can't wait. All right, player.
All right, dude.
See you, buddy.
Great
thanks
zooming.
So yeah, it was fun.
Have a good one.
I'll see you, Jay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.